Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the ale.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama J.
And I guess before we get into anything, Mama, what are you drinking and do you have any What the Ale moments?
Well, I'm actually drinking a soda right now because I feel like a migraine's coming on. So I was like, I'm going to take some Tylenol and drink some caffeine and see if it helps. So I'm having soda. What about you?
Fair and valid. I am having a glass of red wine. It's some sort of dark red because I had a conference today and was like, I'm going to have some wine with dinner. And so, yeah.
Very nice.
And friends, I want to apologize in advance because I have some sniffles happening because it is allergy season.
Yes, it is. And you're walking a lot. Probably you're outdoors now that you're back in Boston. So you're probably out walking all the time with all the things blooming around you.
Yeah, I'm out and I'm walking and I'm on the trains. And yeah, there's just lots of allergens happening today. So I apologize. I did take a pill, but it didn't seem to do anything. But anyway, any What the L moments, Mom?
Yeah, just dealing with some insurance company stuff from that accident that I mentioned a while back, and it's been very frustrating, and I think I have to get a lawyer, and that all sucks because I hate dealing with those kinds of things, but I am a big believer in holding people accountable, so that's where I'm at. So I've had a very frustrating day today.
Yeah, that's super fair. I just don't understand why people can't like own up to making a mistake and like do the things, especially if you have insurance, like just that's what it's for, you know.
But to own up to all of it in the beginning and then like ghost and then not take responsibility later, it's very frustrating.
No, agreed. That's so stupid. Definitely not a fan of that at all.
Yeah. What about you? Any What the L?
I think a good What the L for this week is I was sent to a conference today where it was all about reproductive justice, and I was like in this space with like pretty much all of the women in color leading reproductive healthcare stuff in Boston, and like I met this like lady who's like the queen mother of midwifery and like trains midwives and doulas on an international scale, and like I did some really cool networking and stuff, so it was like definitely a really cool day. My social battery is a little low, but you know, like it was a cool day, and I'm really like fortunate to have a boss that was like, hey, I think this is important and you should attend. So yeah,
very cool. Well, it's always good to do some networking with other powerful women.
Yes, we love being in community with powerful women who are doing amazing work. So I like was almost so tempted. I was like, maybe I'll be a midwife. And then I realized I'd have to go to nursing school and then become an RN and then become a midwife. And I was like, never mind.
No. Yeah, I have so many in my life is I went to midwifery school, but I had already, you know, was already a nurse and all of that before that, and decided to transition to that, but really enjoys it. But it is a long process, and then getting all your hours of experience, clinical hours, all that, it's a lot.
Yeah, it really is a lot. But then my colleague and I, who I was there with, were like, well, maybe we'll become doulas. And so we're still like around and like can't technically catch a baby, but we'll be there. So who knows?
Well, and I know somebody here in Sacramento because we have a volunteer doula program. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just have to do these trainings and you could be a volunteer doula and still do really great work and support women. And yeah, I have somebody that's doing that now and really loves it. So
yeah, I know, I've known a few people who have gone the doula track and really enjoy it. And so I feel like maybe that could potentially be like a little side hustle for me, but you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But anyway, totally shifting gears. Are you ready to get into the topic for the week?
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you got.
All right, friends. I felt like I was really let down after Roswell, realizing how small Roswell was, because I really thought it was a big thing because everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
And so I decided to do another alien encounter abduction situation, if you will, that I felt like had a lot more documentation and a lot more information. So I'm bringing us all down to Snowflake, Arizona.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about the abduction of Travis Walton. Have you ever heard of this case?
Yeah, I think I have, but I didn't realize there was a snowflake Arizona.
I know it
That
doesn't make
seems like a
sense.
contradiction.
I mean, I guess you get some snow up in Pine Top, but yeah.
Yeah, in Flagstaff, but huh? Yeah, Snowflake, Arizona. That's interesting.
So, I do want to say personally, I think this is one of the best documented UFO encounters. And personally, me, myself, and I, not that like you can totally prove if someone's telling the truth or lying, but I kind of am in the court of Travis did experience something versus nothing happened. And we'll kind of get into why as we go on. But
Okay.
that is where I'm coming from with my research. I watched two documentaries and read a lot. So, I
Okay.
did some resources, some research, if you will. But okay, so November 5th, 1975, Travis Walton and a group of loggers were working along the rim in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near the Grand Canyon. And like their whole project was kind of improving the forest, like clearing down trees and things to prevent forest fires. And it is something important to note. So it was like the end of the season, it was early November, and they were running behind. And so they worked really long hours that day. Like normally it was like kind of a 9 to 5, but they were working until like 7 or 8 p.m. But they kind of put the equipment in the trunk at the end of the day and then started to drive down the hill, and they saw a glow in the forest. And so at first they were like, oh, maybe it's just the moon. And then they like looked and were like, no, that's not the moon. And then they looked again and they were like, maybe like a plane crashed or a car crashed, because it was in the middle of a clearing. Like it wasn't like a road was there. And so they decided to go check it out just to make sure, people were safe. And when they got there, they found a round craft that was levitating 15 to 20 feet off of the ground.
Okay.
And this is kind of where the timeline gets screwy. So I'm going to kind of say what the other loggers experienced and then get into what Travis talks about,
Okay.
just
Like
to
it
make it
was
clear.
like a large craft, like
They said it was kind of like the classic like donut shaped craft that was like big and levitating above the ground. So Travis like was like, I'm gonna check this out. And so he gets out the car and goes to investigate. And as he got closer, he said that there was a really high pitched noise and it grew louder, almost like outside of like the human range of hearing. And so he like crouched down to cover his ears and got up to like run back to the truck. And then at that exact moment, the craft like glowed a bright blue or green. And then all of the loggers said they saw Travis floating a few feet off of the ground, and that when the light ended, he like crumpled to the ground and they thought he was dead.
Wow.
And so they were like terrified and out of fear drove away because they were like, this is crazy. And they thought they were next. So they're like, we're gonna get out of here. And Travis himself said that like when this happened to him, he felt like it felt like a high voltage electrocution. He completely lost consciousness, but he was still alive.
Okay.
So the loggers, they drove away out of fear, but then they all like got a few miles away. They saw the craft flew away. So they were like, okay, you know what? Like, let's go back and get Travis, because if he's injured, we need to help him. So they get there and Travis is gone. And I mean, when I say Travis is gone, like they searched the area for hours and he was completely gone. There was not even a sign of him.
Wow.
And so they immediately were like, okay, like we need to report this to police. And so they go to the police and they don't believe him. They're like, I think you killed Travis. Did something happen to Travis? Like, y'all are kind of sketchy. But something important to note is every single logger, there were seven of them, all of them had the exact same story. And yes, people could have rehearsed it, but still, in like an interrogation setting, you'd think someone would crack after like 5 days of interrogating. Something else that was important to note is that all of them agreed to go through a polygraph examination, which we know like polygraphs nowadays are like not really seen as that reliable. But they had like the top guy in the state of Arizona come from Phoenix to administer the polygraph. And he said, you know, they asked questions like, did you kill Travis? You know, what happened? Did you see a flying saucer? That type of thing. And there was absolutely no real sign of deception. Like they all passed except for one guy who his was inconclusive, which I think I mentioned more later in the theories. But so his was inconclusive, but all of them passed the polygraph, which again, you're getting six people passing a polygraph. That's pretty impressive. So after 5 days, Travis kind of appeared, and he in his mind, you know, what happened was he woke up on the roadway in Heber, Arizona. The craft was above him and it just took off silently. And then he saw a light where there was a gas station and a phone booth, and he called his brother-in-law Dwayne, and they collected him. They took him back. And things to note is that Travis had a 5-day growth of beard. He had lost, I believe they said he lost around 10 pounds. He was a kind of a tall and lanky guy. And in his mind, he thought he had only been gone a couple hours. He didn't know until he saw his beard that he had actually been gone longer than that. And so, you know, like I said, kind of weird, that he didn't know. But at the time, like, there were a bunch of UFO groups and tabloids in the media wanting to know what happened because they had already gotten wind of what the friends were saying. And then when Travis came back and was like, I don't know, dude, like, this is kind of weird. They, you know, wanted to talk to him, but Travis really avoided the media for like the immediate time after the incident. He saw the threats and the warnings that his friends were receiving from, you know, what he believed were like government agencies. And so he was like, I don't want to do that. He didn't take a polygraph at first because he didn't want to like be ridiculed and like not believed. And he even said he felt like he was in like a really fragile condition. Like nowadays, we might as well call it like PTSD, but he was having like flashbacks and like trouble sleeping and like all of that. And he's just like, I want to like put it behind me and get back to normal. So his brother Dwayne, who he called when he returned, was the one that kind of took over the communicating with the media and like talking to law enforcement and staff. So at some point, Travis like tried to like kind of recall what happened, but he was having a lot of trouble. And so he actually decided to undergo hypnotherapy, which I think a lot of people, there's a lot of support and not support for hypnotherapy. And it's, you know, really hard to tell. But Travis was in this situation, he was able to kind of recall what happened. And so, with the help of the Aerial Phenomenon Research Office, or APRO, he traveled to Tucson and he decided to work with one of their hypnotherapists. So what he remembers is after he blacked out when the craft like lit up and everything, he regained consciousness and saw a light on the ceiling. He says
Like
he
an exam
believed,
room kind of thing.
yeah, so he thought he was in a hospital or a doctor's office because there was like a big bright light right above him and it kind of looked like a medical situation, very sterile. And he felt like he was in some like bodily pain, like achy, you know? And he saw two men that he said had underdeveloped features and no hair. What he explained was like large brown eyes, abnormally large heads, and then they wore like brown overalls. And every kind of depiction I've seen in like the documentaries, they kind of looked like the typical like gray aliens, like the guys with the big heads and the big eyes and that type of thing. And so when that happened, he obviously freaked out a little bit and lashed out and tried to defend himself. And the creatures left. They were like, all right, dude, bye. So he kind of saw that they went to the right. And so he was like, okay, I'm going to go down the hallway to the left. And so he went into a room that was full of controls. And then a man came in that looked like a human, but he had an air helmet on. And Travis like tried talking to him, but he didn't answer. And the man kind of like led him to a room that was kind of like an airplane hangar, but he said there were two other flying saucers in this room. And then he was led into a different room where there were three other people who didn't answer him. And these people, all four of them, so the guy with the helmet and then the other three, all had the same velvety blue uniforms. He said they were very blemishless, like on their skin. They were really good looking. They were all like blonde hair, blue eyes. He thought they all looked like they could be like quadruplets, like they weren't identical, but they looked related. And so then at that point, he said they put a mask over his face and he lost consciousness. And the next thing he knows, he's waking up in Heber, Arizona on the freeway. So that's super creepy. I mean, I don't know. What do you, I feel like there's a lot of detail there, but it's also hard because, like, some of the stuff really fits typical alien encounters, I guess, or stories, you know? But again, like I said, this is one of the most documented ones, in my opinion. So Travis himself, true, he's still alive. He's kicking down in Snowflake. But he believes that after the hypnosis, he actually felt relief because he finally knew what happened. He said initially he was just really scared of the unknown. He was like, I was gone for 5 days and I have no idea what happened.
Well, but if he was having some nightmares or flashbacks, I do think that's scary, where maybe you like have parts of it that are coming back, but it's like disconnected. So yeah, if he was able to get like a more full picture, I can understand why at least then, you know, if it doesn't feel so disjointed, at least, you know, you would feel, I don't know, just like a little better about having those gaps filled in.
No, totally. I agree. I mean, I would rather kind of know what happened than not, you know, even though it might be hard or scary.
Well, because your mind can go to all kinds of creepy things if you don't know. And yeah, so just like knowing sometimes is better, even if there are some creepy things about it or whatever.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do want to say, the psychologist or the psychiatrist who did the hypnotism was really well renowned. I didn't write his name down, but he's like a really well renowned psychiatrist. Like, you know, he is kind of like a no nonsense. Like, and they actually took a lot of precautions to make sure nothing was falsely reported. Like, they tried not to ask leading questions. They tried not to, you know, whatever. They just kind of let Travis say what he saw or what he was feeling. Like, they didn't say, oh, did you see a craft or did you see people or, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, you never know. I mean, if Travis was thinking, oh, like I saw aliens, like maybe he could have, but it's also hard to know because when you're being hypnotized, you are very suggestible.
Well,
And
I do think it's interesting too that that agency happens to have a hypnopsychiatrist on staff to do these things.
well, I don't know if he was on staff. I just think they
Oh, okay.
paid for him to go and talk to the
Oh, okay.
psychiatrist. Yeah.
I was gonna say, because how often do they need that? That would be interesting.
Yeah, no, I thought about that too. I was like, I wonder if he was a plant, but as far as I could tell, it seemed like they just hired a guy out of Phoenix. And then they also had an actual physicist come and check it out. And he was trying to remain really objective. He had no agenda. He didn't believe either way. But he wanted to say that the thing that was really unique about this encounter specifically was that there were witnesses, and there were several witnesses, and they all passed polygraphs except for one who was inconclusive, and they all had the same account. They all experienced similar things, and even Travis's experience matched up with the witnesses, which to me, even though we know polygraphs are kind of a bogus science, it is interesting. I think it would be really hard to fool a tat. Like, they were like, yeah, you could fool a polygraph maybe once or twice. You couldn't fool it 7 times. You know, that's kind of what they were saying. And so the, and like I mentioned, they had like the top guy in Phoenix come up for the polygraph examination because there really were none in Arizona at the time. But this guy was like trained by the creator of the polygraph in New York City and then like was stationed in Phoenix. Like, he was like really well renowned in the field as well. And he had helped out on several criminal investigations in Arizona and had been really successful. So it's not like he was like a new guy or anything. Like he was pretty well versed in the exam.
Yeah.
And you know, all of the guys said that they were just really scared with a polygraph, that they were going to be convicted of murder, because at the time when they were being interviewed, like they were like, you know, well, did you kill Travis? And da 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 da. What happened to Travis? Did you have beef with him? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And so, I did think that was interesting. And then the guy whose test was inconclusive, apparently he was more nervous because recently he had had a run-in with the law for possession of marijuana. And so they're like, he could have just been super stressed that like he
Yeah.
got caught, you know?
Yeah.
So they were like, there's no, like, you know, this is the 70s. Like it's a little bit different now. But back then, that was really
Yeah.
scary to talk to the cops if you had a prior.
Yeah.
So, like I said, and then they actually did a calculation on the probability of like six people passing a polygraph that weren't telling the truth, and it was 1 million to 1. And then, like I said, the guy whose polygraph was inconclusive, he passed on the second attempt. So, like, once his blood pressure went down and he felt better, he passed again.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so, I, like I said, I know it's a hard science. You never really know with polygraphs, but to me, I think it's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And Travis and his brother Dwayne passed several polygraphs as well. Now, Dwayne wasn't there for the abduction, but his account of like how Travis contacted him and everything were accurate. And they
Well,
did ask him.
yeah, and I'm sure like when he picked Travis up, you know, Travis being confused about time or beard growth or just, you know, all of the things, I'm sure the brother had a lot to say about those kind of early
Yeah.
interactions.
Yeah. And they even asked, I mean, did you see Travis from this date to did this date? Had you heard from Travis? Like, they were just trying to gauge, like, you know, where he was, but like, no one knew where he was. Like, he was just completely gone. So it is interesting. And they also passed several tests as well. I do want to say Travis has passed many, many polygraphs, but he failed one. And he failed this test on a TV show where they were trying to debunk the abduction. And to me, I
Yeah.
don't know, if I was like on national TV, I might fail a polygraph too. I'm not
Yeah.
saying whatever, but he has passed every single other polygraph and
Well,
even
just being
polygraph
on a
since then.
TV show, you would be nervous, and knowing it's a show that's trying to debunk what you're saying, you would have all kinds of feelings about that. And then I will say, if the show had an investment in wanting to debunk it, they might have read the polygraph a certain way too. So.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Travis said. He's like, it didn't feel like they actually wanted me to pass. Like he felt like it was kind of skewed one way. So, you know, you never know. Like I said, we're being open here. There was actually some scientific testing done in the area. So they found that there was a, or in 2014, they did a field survey of the area, because if there was like an object like that that was using stuff, maybe there was debris or radiation or something. And what they found in their calculations was that the wood fiber growth on the trees was 36% higher than in the previous 85 years. So the trees were growing at a really fast rate. And then what they found was that there was a swelling in the growth in the tree ring. So you know how trees are normally circles?
Yeah.
The trees kind of became oblong, like ovals. And the swelling was in the direction of the clearing or where the craft would have been versus the other way on every single tree in that area.
Whoa, that's weird.
Yeah. So, like I said, so it, that science, we don't know why exactly they're not, they haven't done a ton of research on that. But something I do want to note, and I found this in the documentary too, was that after Chernobyl, I think they did a test like 5 years after Chernobyl. And the trees had grown three times in volume of accelerated growth as in previous years. So there does seem to be a correlation with like plant growth and radiation, even though that's not
Yeah.
something we've totally studied a ton. So I do think that's interesting. Doesn't mean that
Yeah.
necessarily was it a UFO? We don't know, but there was something there. And it started from the time that Travis reported the incident. So I do think that's really interesting and cool, because I'm like, that's
Yeah.
science. Like, That's just me. I do want to talk about like one of the big critics of Travis in this whole story, who was Philip Klass. He was like a massive skeptic. I believe he, like, from my side, he was not, open to any other influence at all. But he published papers, he did interviews, with like people. He moved around transcripts to make it seem like maybe the witnesses weren't as credible. He called every single person that was close to the case, every witness, every family member, every sheriff, whatever, but he never reached out directly to Travis, which I think is already showing bias if we're going from
Yeah,
a
I was gonna say
research
that seems like a
standpoint.
little skewed then.
Exactly. Travis also challenged Class to do a redo of the polygraph with an examiner, like an examiner that Class agreed to, and he refused
Yeah,
because,
that's interesting.
like again, like we know a polygraph is something that potentially, if you were smart enough, you could do a false positive or something, but like, why are you refusing when he's like, I'll do it again? Like, and Travis was even like, if I beat the polygraph, you pay for it. But if I lose it, I will pay for it out of pocket. So what was Class losing in that situation to me?
Well, what was he losing if he actually believed that he was lying? But if he
Exactly.
knew that the results were skewed in some way, yeah, then he knew that there was a risk there.
Yeah, exactly. And so you brought up a good point, which I'm going to touch on in a minute. But before I get there, they did, when the medical staff examined Travis, they found a puncture wound behind his elbow, which could have been from the abduction, is kind of like their assumption, like maybe they gave him something. And Travis, or Class, kind of was like, well, Travis was using LSD because this is the 70s and we can't, act like this, like, blue collar guy was straight laced and not doing anything. But there was no evidence. Like, there was no evidence that Travis did LSD. There was no evidence that the other guys used LSD. So I don't know. There was also, so the leader of the group, like I said, they were behind on their contract. They were trying to, make up for lost time because they were behind on cleaning up the forest. And so his argument was like, well, if Rogers was behind, maybe he was like making up the story to get out of it. But they actually like talked to the contractor person that was like kind of in charge of the whole mission. They talked to Rogers, and like the encounter wouldn't have gotten them out of it. And there was no way to actually benefit from the incident. If anything, they were actually harmed from it. And the government like was putting a lot of pressure on Rogers to sign an affidavit to confess to like fraud, essentially. And he was like, I did nothing. Like, I'm just telling you, I saw my friend get zapped and he collapsed. Like, that's all I saw. Class eventually, like I said, offered. So he never talked directly to Travis, but he did offer Travis and the folks he was connected with $10,000 in 1980 to confess to
Really?
fraud. Yes.
That's
So
interesting.
I know. And so here's something interesting. So the documentary went into it. I didn't have time to really look further into this, but they kind of were like, who was Class connected to? Because he seemed to have an agenda.
Yeah, for sure.
So there was a huge UFO debunker at the time named Donald Menzel, and he was connected to the NSA. And this guy like was from Harvard. And he had written a letter to JFK in the 60s about being involved as a part of the NSA, which, for those who don't know, it's the National Security Administration. But he had written a letter to JFK saying, I'm an astronomer and you're going to need my expertise. And this was like during the space race, before we had men on the moon and all that. And so people believe that the CIA could have been using Class to discredit them. And kind of distract from, the actual situation. One piece of evidence was that class was constantly published in the New York Times and other well-known publications with like no issues. Like he was like constantly in different newspapers writing op-eds and things like, don't believe Travis Walton, he's terrible, look over here. Which again, like I said, if he was not biased, he wouldn't have, in my opinion, he would have talked to Travis and he would have been more open to the scientific method. And he didn't seem like that at all to me if he was a scientist. Something someone else noted was that, he was like a professor at like a small college. He didn't have a huge income, right? But he somehow had $10,000 to bribe Travis and the other guys. And what was he going to gain from this bribe? Like in reality, was kind of their belief. So, like I said, to me, it sounds like class maybe was involved in something. Maybe Travis stumbled upon something he shouldn't have. But I do want to say a few things about Travis and how he's doing, or like how he feels about it now, because it's been a really long time. And then I also have some little like UFO fun facts. Travis and all of the witnesses, I mean, it's not like they did this for fame. It doesn't seem like that at all. Like, several of them lost their jobs, lost out on other opportunities. Quite a few moved out of the town because they couldn't escape it. Travis still lives in Snowflake, but he really can't, he can't escape it. He just hasn't been able to. And he, goes on talk shows and stuff. And he's like, well, I'll just stay here, I guess. But he's even like quoted several times saying like, I think about it all the time. Like I could just say we were drunk and we faked it, but like he's like, but then people would pick on me anyway. Like if I lied and said that we faked it, people would pick on me for lying. And he's like, and I didn't lie. And so, a lot of people in the documentary also were like, Travis doesn't seem to enjoy it. He's like awkward. He doesn't seem to have fun when he's in front of
Yeah, he
cameras.
wasn't doing this for like fame or attention or,
And he in the documentary even said, he's like, I just said, like, I became this guy and I said this because I felt like other people needed a voice. Like, if they had experienced this, to know that like other people were experiencing this as well. And like they weren't alone. Like he wanted to kind of be an ally and an advocate for other folks who were experiencing it. But before we kind of get into like the theory of maybe why Travis was taken, I wanted to say what Travis's theory was, because I think that's kind of interesting. So Travis's like main theory as to why he was taken was that that beam that struck him was most likely going to be fatal if he didn't get to a hospital. And he believes that the Greys took him in order to save him. And he was like, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, And he was like, even members of the crew said things like they wish it would have happened to us or, whatever. And he's like, no, like it shouldn't have happened. It sucked. It wasn't great. But like, he
So
was
does
like,
he
my.
think then that they struck him with that accidentally, and then we're like, oh shit, look what we did, or?
Yeah, so his theory is like maybe they were there for surveillance, or maybe they were there and saw that the truck came up and were trying to escape but didn't see Travis. And then they like tried to take off or something. They struck Travis with the beam, and then they felt bad when his friends abandoned him and were like, we need to save him. Is kind of his theory. And a lot of that goes back to his like memories of like, he was like, yeah, like they like interacted with me. They put a mask on my face and I like passed out or, whatever. I woke up in an exam room. But he was like, it wasn't like they were hurting me. Like he's like, I don't remember any sort of like torture or tests or anything. And they were like kind of just like
Any
chill with
probing?
me. Yeah. And he was like, they were kind of chill with me just existing,
Well, that's a good theory.
Yeah, and I kind of like that. Like I said, because I remember like when I first heard about this, I was like, oh, he was probed, and then like he wasn't probed. Like he was just like on the ship, and we don't really know what happened. So I do think it's interesting. I think that's a cool theory. And like I said, Travis is like, I have no ill will towards them. Like he's like, because he was like, He was like, why would they have taken me? He's like, I'm not that smart. He's like, I'm not smart. I'm not an asset. I'm not important to the world. Like, why would they have taken me? And that's kind of his theory. But
Okay.
I do have a few like UFO facts before we kind of wrap up, which I thought were fun.
Okay.
So I don't know if you know this, but can you give me a ballpark of how many UFO encounters you think have occurred in the US?
Oh my gosh, like I would have no idea.
No? No guess, no number?
Yeah, I really can't, because I don't even know if it would be in the hundreds, the thousands, or the millions. Like I or tens of millions, tens of thousands. I really have no idea, Alana.
Well,
You're gonna be
approximately
like, oh,
nine.
it was three. No.
It's been approximately 92,000 that have been reported in the
92,000.
US.
Okay.
Yes. And according to most people who research UFOs, this incident in Snowflake is the most documented case with the most, like, somewhat credibility.
I
And
mean, there's definitely more witnesses to this one than there are to a lot of the others, I think.
I think so too. And I also think there, so something else they said, there's like 12,000 UFO sightings a year. And statistically, like we know some of those might be like military tests, weird planes, that type of thing. Because UFOs are
Yeah.
just unidentified flying objects. They're not like flying saucers.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of sightings annually. And so people are like, well, statistically, like with how big the universe is and how many sightings there are, Travis could be telling the truth. Like, it's not like improbable, right? And he said that, like, he himself has been noted many times saying, like, it is important to be skeptical with the reports and hold them to strict scrutiny. He's like, hold them to the scientific method,
Yeah.
hold them to, looking for evidence. He's like, because that's important. Like, he's not out here like, believe all the UFO encounters, and something they all kind of mentioned was that they believe that people nowadays are more open to accepting the idea of intelligent life coming to Earth. And so maybe that's why, the story kind of has always lived on. Like I said, this happened in 1975 and people are still talking about it. And they just made a documentary a year
Wow.
ago with Travis talking about it. So it is interesting that this is something that has gone on for so long. And something Travis, kind of, I wouldn't say begrudgingly, but he just kind of like said, he was like, listen, if you're talking to a skeptic that's convinced you're 100% lying to them, it's like talking to a brick wall. Like, they're not going to listen to you. They're
Yeah.
not going to whatever. So he's like, it's not worth
Yeah.
it.
Well, and
And
that's why,
he's
like,
like,
with some of the stuff, if somebody clearly had an agenda, yeah, they're probably gonna find their way because they've already decided what they're gonna find,
Yeah, exactly. And that's something too I, would want to say, like with the Philip Klass piece, and like something even Travis said was like, he's like, why can't people just say like, oh, something weird happened. We just can't explain it. Like, what's so hard about saying something
Yeah.
weird happened,
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the basis of the abduction and disappearance of Travis Walton, and I just wanted to share it because I thought it was super interesting.
Yeah, no, that really is interesting.
But do you have any thoughts? I mean, do you think he actually was abducted? Do you think he's making it up? Like, what are your vibes?
I mean, my thoughts are, because I really do believe that there has to be other intelligent life because the universe is so vast and it just does not make sense that we'd be the only intelligent life anywhere in the universe. So I definitely think there is. It would not shock me if there are, beings out there that are more advanced or more intelligent than we are, have better technology or whatever. That would not shock me because we're a little slow. It takes us some time. So yeah, I mean, but I do think it's interesting that, with all of those things like the bribe and all of that, that he never changed his story. I think it's interesting that there were so many witnesses that all had the same story, because again, a lot of these abductions we hear about, like nobody's around, nobody sees it. And so, I just think all of that stuff is really interesting. So I like the idea that this would be true.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, I don't know, the wood growth on the trees is at least
Yeah, stuff
telling to
like
me
that's
that
very
something
interesting.
happened. Like, it
Something
doesn't,
definitely happened.
to me, I'm like, it might not mean that it was a UFO. It could have been something super weird, but like something happened there. 'Cause why, starting in 1975, did these trees suddenly have an increase in wood growth? That's unexplained. So that's just
That's
how I
stuff like
feel.
that definitely is interesting.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of all I had with this one,
Okay.
but I'm really happy I got to
That's
share it.
I like that story.
I've been sitting on it for a while. I was like, I really want to do it, but I knew there were several documentaries, so I was like, I want to wait till I have time to like sit down and watch them, rather than just kind of reading the Spark Notes. But yeah, like I said, the documentary, I think it's called like Alien Abduction: The True Story of Travis Walton, I believe is the name of the documentary. I watched it on YouTube for free, so if anyone's interested, you could totally watch it.
Oh,
But
nice.
lots of other like alien encounter shows have covered this. Like I said, it's one of the most documented, so a lot of people see it as evidence of intelligent life in the world. And I really think it's a cool story. So
I do
that's
too,
why. But yeah, I guess getting into some housekeeping things, friends. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at What the L Pod. We, are going to be getting our flight out to you next week, as well as our bonus episode for April. So keep an eye out. And then we're also going to have, or not, we're going to have, but feel free to send us your kind of story ideas or anything like that, as they come up, and we will put them into a nice little listeners episode for y'all. And outside of that, I just want to say I appreciate you, Mama. And
I appreciate you, baby.
we appreciate you, friends. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hi.